This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 267 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, March 15th, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Marcus Couch. Marcus, my main man. What's happening?
Just basking in the 80-degree weather, having a good time.
Shove it.
Ah!
Why? Last week I'm sawing down trees that got blown over by the wind, and today I'm shoveling out my driveway. I don't get this. What a crazy world!
It's global warming.
I suppose. So we have a great show on tap for everybody today. We were noticing Marcus and I were checking for iTunes reviews before the show, and it's been a while. So this is your friendly reminder, a little public service announcement that if you could, if you're a listener of the show, please, please, please find a way, somehow, some way, to give us a review on iTunes. Whether it's good, whether it's bad, it does not matter. We value your feedback, and just be nice to go in there and see a new review for a change.
Yeah, plus, we don't want to be beaten by Matt Medeiros and the Matt Report, so come on. I mean, it's embarrassing, so please help us out.
It just goes to show you, people listen to Matt, they don't listen to us.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes. All right, so with that said, we have a great topic, a great guest on the show today. His name is Aaron Campbell, and he has more than 16 years of web development experience. He has been a regular contributor to WordPress for the last 8 years and even co-led the WordPress 3.6 release. Aaron has worked with clients ranging from small local businesses to Google, Yahoo, Disney, and Harvard. And he is also the WordPress security team lead, which is what we'll be focused on here in a little bit. And Aaron, thank you very much for joining us on the show. I know you're a full-time contributor to WordPress, and you folks are busy, so we appreciate you joining us.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
All right, so let's get started with the very beginning, and that is I'd like to hear your sort of WordPress origin story, and how did you discover and get involved with WordPress?
Yeah, so actually the little bio that you read is a little bit out of date at this point, so I guess I should update that wherever it is. So I think that my origin story is actually pretty similar to a lot of people's that got involved in WordPress. I was doing client work on the web and looking for a good tool to use, I guess probably more like 14 or so years ago now, and started kind of testing them out and eventually settling on WordPress and starting to do client work. 10 years ago, I had a client that I found a bug in WordPress while I was building his site. And the whole goal was, how can I fix this so that I don't have to fix it every time I upgrade his site? And so I went through and found the IRC channel at the time and found out how to submit a fix. And as soon as my code made it into WordPress, I was hooked. I thought that was really cool. And I wanted to do that again and again. And I sort of did. I just kind of ramped that up slowly but surely now over the last 10 years.
IRC, boy, that feels like so long ago. But yet, cause now that we have Slack HQ and all these other chat groups, but I believe the IRC channel still exists and there's still quite a few members in it.
Yeah, the one for support still exists. The one that's for core development, I believe, is shut down or at least not officially used anymore. But yes, the support one is still going strong from what I hear.
So in 2014, you left Range, which was a design and development agency you co-founded, and you joined a company called iThemes. And we've had Corey Miller on a show a number of times, in fact, a friend of the show. Even times where me and Marcus had to vent, Corey comes on, helps us out, gives us a little bit of therapeutic help. But what projects did you work on at iThemes, and what was your experience like working for that company?
So I started there kind of hopping from product to product as kind of fresh eyes and fresh blood in the company, but somebody with a kind of a long time of WordPress experience. I just went around and sort of assessed all the products and what they might benefit from, what tweaks and changes could be made. But it wasn't very long before I settled on iTheme Security, which I ran for the last about, I guess, year and a half of being there. I was one of the lead developers on that and had a lot of fun working with that.
Yeah, iTheme Security, that was one of the big acquisitions when they brought on Chris Wegman, who was the original developer of that product. And as I've seen lately, boy, iTheme Security is just, you could do all kinds of stuff with it now.
We put a lot of work into it, all right? Kind of trying to, I guess, modernize it. You know, I mean, security changes so much so fast. The things that, not anymore, but there's always new things to protect against. So we put quite a bit of work into that, as well as cleaning up the user interface. Security is already kind of complex and scary enough. You want the to use, so we put a lot of focus into that. And I know that since I have left, they have continued to push ahead aggressively with that, making some really fantastic progress.
And so you settled on iTheme Security, but when did you start gaining an interest in web security? Or is this something, you know, you've always had a thing for?
I guess I've always had a thing for it to a certain extent. Originally, it was more the other side of it. I enjoyed putting that more devious side of my brain to work and finding ways of breaking things, right? As I started doing web work more professionally, and as my clients got bigger and bigger, handling security was kind of at the core of a lot of those projects. And so you kind of put in the time to learn a lot of the basics and the necessities, but you also just kind of learn by experience as you go through that, working with it day in and day out. I found that the more I did that, the more I enjoyed not just finding out how to break things, but then how to stay a step ahead of those people and prevent it where possible. So it kind of sparked my interest. It's a fun place to use kind of both sides of the brain there, the analytical and the creative.
You know, when I read some of these detailed reports like on Sucuri or some of the other sites about even like Stuxnet, and I read about all the things that are involved in the low levels, hardware level type things that you have to know about and the things that are broken, It's fascinating to me, but there's no way I feel like I could ever comprehend the amount of knowledge and skill needed to pull off some of these these hacks.
You know, I think that it takes a group of people for that very reason. I don't really think that there's any one person that's capable of containing that sort of level of knowledge on all the various kinds of hacks.
Yeah.
So you have the people that specialize in that kind of thing and know a lot about that. But then we also have to have people that are really well-versed in multi-byte character sets and the potential issues there. People that are well-versed in, you know, various types of PHP attacks. Like it takes a big group, I think, to do it right.
Well, I mean, just look at the movie Hackers. They had to work together as a team, right?
It's the theme of the movie.
in late 2016, you left iThemes and joined GoDaddy as the full-time contributor to WordPress. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how this relationship happened.
Yeah, so I've been, you know, like I said, constantly getting more and more involved in WordPress over the last 10 years, and it's something that I've been very interested in doing, moving to a place where I could work full-time on WordPress. I love being able to work on this project that sort of pushes forward the open web. It's become more than just like a job or something that I write code for, and it's a passion of mine. There aren't a lot of those positions out there. There aren't a lot of people that get the chance to work full-time on it. So when GoDaddy was looking for someone and they talked to me about it, it was something that I was extremely interested in doing.
What was the catalyst for that conversation? Like, how did that initially come about? Did they contact you? Did you put in an application with them? What was the process?
So when the job opening happened, they contacted me, but I think that it started quite a bit before that, just tips with those people at events, conferences, that kind of thing, so that they were aware that I was, you know, someone that would be interested in a position like that and somebody that might be able to hopefully do good things in a position like that.
Does it kind of sound you a little bit, or, I mean, what are your thoughts on companies like GoDaddy who are now sponsoring people, paying people to work on WordPress full time? I mean, that's a stark change to even just a few years ago.
Yep. It definitely is. I love it. I think that it's a really good thing for our ecosystem. I'm sure that there are people that will disagree with me, but WordPress has grown a lot, and the project has become a little bit monolithic, and it takes a lot of effort to keep that moving forward. And the continuity that can be brought by people who are able to work full-time and regularly on it is extremely beneficial. And I think that having company, I think that it would be bad, but having lots of companies that have vested interests in making sure that WordPress does well, all pitching in and putting their money where their mouth is and helping push the project forward, I think that that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I mean, I think the more companies and representatives we can have involved in the decision-making process and being involved at the core level, the better. I want to say farewell to the days when Automattic had the vast majority of influence and people staffed to work on WordPress full time. So if we can, you know, nowadays it's definitely, you know, there's more representation from more companies and more people. It's not just Automattic, and you know, we could stop reading articles about how Automattic is influencing everything. It's not that simple anymore.
Yeah, and I do think that Automattic still has a bigger group there than any other single company. I also don't think that WordPress would be where it is without them. I think that
I agree.
Amount of effort they put in is huge, but I also think that it is more healthy for the project moving forward if we have a wider array of people involved.
I agree. I'm right there with you. So at, I think it was WordCamp Europe, back in 2015, Matt Mulloway had announced this new sort of position called WordPress Security Czar, which sounds kind of cool, to be honest. I don't know if you're a fan of that, or otherwise known as the WordPress Core Security Team Lead. And he announced that Nikolay Bochisky, I hope I got that right. You could help me if you know how to pronounce it. He fulfilled that role for a while, and then in 2000, Actually, January this year, Matt Mulloway can announce that you were replacing Nicolay. So maybe you could tell us a little bit of backstory on, you know, was it a question? It, like, was he just asking for volunteers to step up who wanted the position? How did that happen?
Well, the first of all, I'd been involved in the security team for quite a while, from actually before there was a security czar, basically right up until I took it over. And so it was something that, again, I had said that I was passionate about and interested in. And so it was something that I was wanting the chance to do more with. The actual transition, I'll be honest, the position takes a lot of time and effort, and Nicolay did some fantastic things in helping organize our team and start getting some of our tooling built up. He's the one that first started getting the HackerOne project started, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. But I think that he had other things that he wanted to be able to do. And in order to keep the team moving forward and organized and functioning at, I guess, peak capacity, it really needed someone there to organize it. And it's something that I wanted to try to do.
Yeah, so you're sort of like the shepherd, you know, gotta keep everyone on task.
Yeah, I'm really more the constant reminder, the person that, you know, tries to make sure that things don't fall through the cracks, tries to remind people when they've got things that are going on. It's definitely, like I said, everybody's got their knowledge base in various areas of security. It's not that I'm going in and fixing every bug. It's really about organizing a team, and it's great to have a group of people there actively working on making WordPress secure.
Speaking of the security team, do you know how many people are on it, and are some of the members on this team employees or representatives of security firms?
Yes. So like many teams in WordPress, there's far more people, I guess, on it than are constantly active. You know, they all have day jobs and are, you know, sometimes more or less involved, or maybe are pulled in for very specific types of tickets and tasks. There's roughly 50 or so people that are on the team. And there are representatives of a lot of companies there. There's hosts, there's security teams, there's development companies, there's reps from, I mean, I guess I say reps, I don't know that they're really representing their company on the security team, but you know, it's people that are employed at these other various companies that are a part of it, for sure.
So it's 100% volunteer though, right?
Yes. There's no one that's just paid full-time WordPress core security, I guess, other than me at this point, although I do more than just that on WordPress stuff, but that's definitely been my focus lately, for sure.
Does that seem like a concern that no one is actually, well, besides yourself, I mean, but that's not more of a paid priority? Do you have any concern about that?
I think that as long as we are keeping up with the load and staying on top of things, I don't think that I'm going to be concerned about it. Most of those people that I say aren't full time, most of them do have some dedicated time to give to WordPress, whether it's a couple hours a week or a few hours a week. And a lot of them are fairly flexible, able to put in more hours when the need is there and, you know, less when it's not. But so far, that really hasn't been a limiting factor.
Five for the future. That's what I say.
Yeah, and it is a lot of really, I guess, well-behaving companies in the WordPress ecosphere that have people on there. You know, it's development companies that everybody knows and recognizes, and hosts that everybody knows and recognizes. You know, there's automaticians on there for sure. So it's definitely the people that are either doing the five for the future, or at least attempting to and getting as close to it as they can.
Well, on the Tavern, we write about security vulnerabilities, security releases all the time. But you know, having you on the team lead, you know, I think it would be cool to sort of get some background info, starting with the initial report. What is the process like for releasing a version of WordPress that has that patches security vulnerabilities?
Yeah. So right now, reports come in two different ways. We have security@wordpress.org, the email address that we've used for reporting security vulnerabilities. And we also have now HackerOne set up. It's not gone completely public yet, but we are inviting people as we get reports, we're inviting them to basically our beta there and letting them report there. And I'm hoping that we'll be launching that pretty soon and making that our primary method. It's definitely easier for the back and forth with the reporter on HackerOne than it is via email.
And for those who are not familiar with HackerOne, it's this sort of bounty service set up that a lot of companies use. So you can put a price or a fixed amount on a bounty or a security vulnerability, and it sort of allows facilitation between the company and the reporter. And if things all work out and the report's valid and responsible disclosure happens, that the person who reported the bug is paid a bounty.
Yeah, I think kind of. I think that at its core, it's really a secure method of communicating back and forth with a reporter and a responsible way of doing it. The bug bounty is a big part of it, I guess. And, you know, it's something that makes it more worthwhile for the security reporters. There's offering a reward for helping keep this program that we all use secure seems reasonable. So it is part of it. But for me, the biggest benefit that it offers is really smooth back and forth communication, which is a big deal because you want to keep your reporters aware of what's going on so that they don't feel like you've forgotten them and end up, you know, sharing the information publicly instead of letting you finish fixing it first.
Which, and you mentioned communication, and we found out just how important that aspect of this whole process can be back in 2014 when they, I believe it was a security researcher who worked for the EFF reporting an issue with logged in cookies with WordPress.com, and how if you could somehow log in and you could do other things as the user. And she had reported the issue to an email address or something related to automatic, and there was this automatic message that says, "We'll respond to you within 24 hours. She didn't hear a response, and so she went public with it. And we found out, communication's a big part of this whole process.
Yeah, it really is. And it's also one of the harder parts of the process. And I don't know if it's because it's less interesting or less fun, or if it's just because it requires pretty consistent attention. But whatever it is, it's definitely one of the more difficult parts of – I actually think it's usually more difficult than the actual – fixing of the bug.
So as part of the process, communication takes place, you receive a bug report. What happens next?
So there's, you know, back and forth of first verifying that the report is valid, closing the ones that aren't, and we get a lot that aren't. I think many projects do. And then the ones that are valid, figuring out the best fix, and that's not always, we'll use WordPress in so many different ways. It seems like every time you're fixing a security vulnerability, you're having to be extremely careful not to ruin or impede some other piece of functionality. And that includes a lot of back and forth within the security team, and ultimately taking that patch once we think we have it ready to the reporter, usually, and letting them see it and test it so that they can make sure that it covers all the cases that they had originally envisioned. And then that gets slated for the next minor, whenever that is. Deciding when the next minor release is, obviously, based on the number of security issues that we've dealt with and patched, or the severity of them, whether that release might be or, you know, something that needs to be done within days or immediately in a worst case scenario.
Is it sort of safe to say that there are bug reports that are being followed up on, or kind of, I know, what was it? 4.6 or 4.7. It was an earlier branch. I know Gary Pendergast was involved in that, where, you know, there were some security changes that were made that invariably introduced other issues. So another release was made, and I don't know, there's like 2, 3, maybe 4 total point releases that were made that, and I know there's some lessons that were learned in that process that I think have improved things overall in the release process.
Yeah, I think that's true. We've gotten a lot better at unit testing over time, and that helps. Has gotten bigger. I think that more eyes help prevent those kinds of oversights, I guess, if that's, and I'm not sure that that's quite a fair term to use, but the truth of it is, though, that stuff still, as I said, WordPress is big and people use it so many different ways that it can be very hard to see potential fallout. They also use it in so many different environments. We actually had a very recent issue with this, where we fixed a security issue around file uploads, only to have video and audio uploads affected on certain hosting environments, and we had to roll out another release of that.
Oh, was that the MIME type issue?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
And so, you know, I mean, that's part of trying to be careful. You're always walking a fine line, right? I say that security is all about balance. Sometimes it's the balance between ease of use and most secure, but sometimes it's the balance between how long do we wait to push out a fix? How much time do we give it to make sure that we're really getting things right, versus risking that somebody might find it and not disclose it responsibly, you know, post it publicly somewhere, and we would be behind the curve. We always want to get the release out before it's public knowledge that this bug exists. But you never quite know when it could become public knowledge. It could be any second, or people could not find it for months. So you're constantly trying to play that game of when is the right time to release this.
So we go through the whole process. Let's say even like the most recent example with the WordPress REST API, the vulnerability that was there. And then at some point we do this thing called disclosure. And I know you've recently written a post on the topic of disclosure, and just what makes disclosing security vulnerability is a difficult process in and of itself?
I think the most obvious thing, like the biggest thing, is that you can't disclose only to the good behaving people, right? There's no way to tell everybody that is not going to attempt to exploit this without also telling those that will attempt to exploit this. When you disclose to everybody. And that obviously makes it more difficult because you are telling the people that there was a security issue and they now know to review the changes that were made, track down the problem, and start attempting to exploit it. But as much as that's a downside, you're also giving the people that are the good behaving people the chance to protect themselves. And you're giving them the knowledge that that this issue existed and that there was risk involved, and maybe they can, maybe they can mitigate it, but also maybe something did happen on their site and they need to, be aware that it's something they should check for.
Now, in this post about disclosure, one of the last questions you say that, a person, security researcher, somebody should ask themselves is, what did I do wrong? And I know that you receive criticism for the release of 4.7.2 for how the additional information was presented and other aspects in terms of who this information was given to prior to public disclosure. So I wanted to ask you this question based on that release. Did you do anything wrong for the release of 4.7.2, or did you learn anything that will be applied for future releases?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that hindsight is always clearer, right? Looking back at it, do I think that the thing that most people seemed to get upset about, which is delaying the disclosure, do I think that that was a wrong move? No, I think that that was extremely good. Looking at the numbers, I can see that millions of sites were updated and protected from the issue. Issue was ever in the wild and being exploited. And I think that for the users of WordPress, that was best. I feel very similarly about involving WAFs and hosting companies. It was a vulnerability that they were able to protect against without disclosing it to people that could exploit it. This is not always the case. Not all vulnerabilities can be filtered out through network traffic. This was one that when you look at taking the top, say, even 4 or 5 biggest WordPress hosts, you can protect a lot of people that way. And I think that that was, looking back on it, though, we waited just under a week to disclose. Again, constantly worried going to find this and start exploiting it before we disclose. And I think that that worry is both because you don't want people to be caught completely unaware, and also because we want to have a reputation of being open and honest about this stuff so that people can continue to trust us in the future. And if you only disclose after bad stuff happens, it's tough to tell whether you were actually going to disclose or whether you got caught and then disclosed anyway, right? Looking at it, waited a little longer. I think that it would have been more beneficial looking at it now in hindsight and being able to see what happened the days after disclosure, that no one had yet discovered the issue. It was actually a very complex, difficult issue to find. And so we probably could have waited longer, and maybe the number of sites that didn't update and you know, were adversely affected would have been even smaller.
At the time,
there was no way to know.
I think it was one of the amazing things about how this all shook out is highlighting the fact of just how many websites out there are not auto-updating, apparently. Because had they had auto-updating enabled, they would have been protected from this vulnerability.
Yep.
Was that issue discussed or brought up during the team? Like, why are all these sites out there not auto-updating? Or
that's been a really consistent discussion in the security team for at least a few years, basically since we started auto-updating.
3.7 then.
In 3.7. And we would love everybody to do it. I really think that it's one of the best things that helps with WordPress security is our ability to fix an issue and push it to your site so you never have to worry about it. But those that don't, unfortunately, there's not a lot that we can do about that. We try to raise awareness through posts, I guess, but that's not as effective as I would like.
What happens when one of these anomalies that's a security vulnerability occurs? Can you describe kind of the process of like your evaluation process? And then is there like a big powwow conference call between the team and hosts and all of that? Can you kind of get into the backstage area of what that's like when you find those vulnerabilities?
Yeah, so that differs a lot depending on what kind of vulnerability it is. Some smaller, simpler things, if we found some sort of, say, I don't know, issue where something wasn't escaped properly and that's all we're looking at doing is escaping something properly in WordPress admin, it's probably not going to take a big powwow with everyone involved. We always make sure that more than one or two people are involved in everything, but that's not going to be severe enough to, I guess, you know, ring the bells and bring everybody in. If it is a bigger deal, yes, we don't do conference calls so much. We use Slack. There is a private security channel on the WordPress Slack that we use for communication. That is where the vast majority of it happens. We have a couple meetings every week that are sort of triage meetings. But if there's a serious bug that needs everybody's attention, that's where we meet together. That's where we use the same, you know, at group messages that everybody sees in the core channels. And we bring everybody together and we discuss it. If we need to get hosts involved, which has been a little bit of a newer process, we have another Slack channel that we have hosts in that we have started to add security representatives from hosts, specifically people that work on that host's security internally and can give additional eyes or opinions or about how it might affect their specific platform. And we use those to discuss and go back and forth to trade patches around things. And those are where the vast majority of that happens.
And so my next question to you is, what's the most, I guess auto updates is probably the biggest thing, but what do you think is the most obvious hole in WordPress security that's frequently overlooked?
So auto updates is a huge thing. People that aren't updating, that's obviously that's massive. Having said that, I'm not sure that that's actually the biggest. Looking at percentages, the vast majority of sites do auto-update. Plugins and themes are a really big deal when it comes to security. People don't necessarily update those as much. Many of those don't receive as rigorous of assessment and review, but it's going to be extremely rare to come across any WordPress site that doesn't use plugins or non-default themes, one or the other or both. So one of the things that we as a team are trying to push out into over the next, if giving a time span is the best, but something that we're looking at pushing out into in the near future, is trying to help lend our expertise and our tool sets and our people to some of those bigger plugins. I would like to see us sort of extend our umbrella over some of the biggest plugins first, and then extend that out to some more, and try to come up with ways that we can help keep plugins secure, just like we help keep WordPress secure. Because really, when somebody's using WordPress, they're using WordPress and plugins and themes, but they're seeing it as WordPress. It's part of our platform and it's part of our reputation.
And the team has sort of done this already by working at sometimes with Yoast, the WordPress SEO plugin, if there's a vulnerability there, or even with Jetpack. I remember you want to talk about an instance where there was a big powwow. It was back in, I think it was May of 2016, when 4.0.3 was released, and it fixed a stored cross-site scripting vulnerability that had been present in the plugin since 2012. So that was like an all-hands-on-deck type of affair from what I heard, because they had to work with a number of web hosts and try and get it fixed before disclosure happened. But I think this was I think it was during the State of the Word last year, Matt Mulloway had brought up that the WordPress security team brought up the issue that they were going to try and get a HackerOne group set up for WordPress Core, and then somebody had asked the question, well, what about plugins and themes? And he jokingly said, well, we'd probably go broke because they're, you know, dealing with how many security issues are, you know, involved with plugins. But I think you're definitely right on with plugins and themes is just it's a whole world in and of unto itself.
Right. And obviously there are things to overcome in getting this all set up. Yes, he was jokingly saying that that maybe we'd go broke if we were paying for all the vulnerabilities found in plugins. But at the same time, possibly lending our tools and letting some of those plugins make use of our HackerOne, if that makes sense. You know, maybe that's something we do, even if the bug bounties aren't paid from us or bug bounties aren't paid at all on those. There's problems to resolve, but I think that there are problems that need to be addressed and figured out and worked through, because I think that the net benefit could be pretty fantastic.
And I wanted to ask you something that's from your personal opinion, so it doesn't reflect on your position or anything else. But what are your thoughts on security service providers like Security or WordFence and how they disclose vulnerabilities to the public? I personally trust and like the way Security does them with their Dread Score and how they seem to get things, you know, on the money. WordFence kind of not so much, and that's just my personal opinion. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so personal thoughts or not, I'll try to just leave names out of it because of where I'm at.
Right.
But I think that First of all, let me say that I think that these kinds of disclosures are extremely difficult to do, and it's always a game of adjusting based on what you've done and trying to get better and better at it. I think that having a more objective way of assessing threat level is good. I think that being very factual about things and not letting things right. Let's not hype things up. Let's be real analytical. I think that in security, much more than in many other areas, I think that cooler heads really prevail. Taking the time to analyze it, separate yourself from it a little bit, and report it is good. Having said that, it's also always a bit of a balance on how much do you share. You want to share enough that that you help users out, but there's definitely a thing as oversharing. You're giving too much information, making it too easy for people to figure out how to exploit the issue, right? You want to give enough information to help people protect from it, but not enough information to help people exploit it. And that's really difficult to do, especially depending on the type of vulnerability. And it's just always a little different, and it's very hard. But it's something that I think those kinds of companies need to really focus on perfecting, on trying to make sure that they're not building excess hype and that they are analyzing things sort of with a degree of separation. I think it would help a lot.
And I understand this, and what I get from the conversation and what I hope our listeners realize is that these disclosures and vulnerabilities are all have their sort of unique circumstances, and the whole issue of disclosure is complex, and there's no one size fits all for every scenario.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great if we could just set out like a standard set of rules, and these are the things that you do. But it seems like every case is kind of unique and has to be treated as such. One size definitely does not fit all. But I also want to say, as much as I've maybe sounded a little bit down on disclosures and giving too much information and stuff, I think that they're really important. And I think that disclosing these vulnerabilities publicly is ultimately the best thing for the internet moving forward, and helping others be able to learn from our issues is good. I want to be able to have us learn from other people's issues. I want them to be able to learn from ours. You know, the internet's no longer just a toy or a fun thing. It's a utility. It's kind of a foundation that we've built a lot of our systems on top of, people's livelihoods. And it's important to keep that moving forward as securely as possible, you know.
I have a question just concerning the REST API, and we had kind of a negative debut of it in the last release. Jeff and I always tease that the REST API is like flying cars. You know, we kept hearing about it forever and ever that we were going to be getting this cool new thing. And then it turned out to have some sense of a security vulnerability. How can we turn this kind of negative debut around to become a positive for the REST API from a security standpoint?
Yeah, so, I mean, first of all, the newer code is, the more likely it's going to have issues, right? And that's not just the REST API. That's every new function, every new bit of functionality that's ever added to WordPress. The longer it's around, the more people have, I guess, pounded on it, so to speak, the more people have used and reviewed and broke it, the more secure it's going to be. And the REST API is new. It really is. But it's really been pretty solid. Yes, the one vulnerability that we had was ugly. It wasn't a fun one to go through. But in the end, the way I think it's going to turn around is moving forward. The REST API was a bit of an investment in the future. It's a tool that people will use to develop flying cars as opposed to being flying cars in and of itself. And so I think that over the next year or two, as we see these tools coming out and as we see people building these flying cars with it, I think that's when we'll start to really appreciate its benefits.
So it's much like the hydrocopter type of gyrocopter thing on drones, right? So we've seen that there's technology that can make things happen, yet we're not driving around with gyrocopter blades on our cars just yet.
Right. Somebody built the gyroscope and the electronics to use it to keep things flying, you know, right side up and smoothly. And now we have all sorts of things that fly using that. Everything from helicopters to the little drone that you use to take, you know, cool selfies and clips onto the back of your phone, right? That's stuff that's been built with the tool. And I think the REST API is the tool that will enable a lot of that.
All right, Jeff. So we've been overanalyzing it this entire time for two years now.
And I think Mika Epstein had a great take on this, and that, you know, the XMRPC, when it was introduced, and it kind of has a lot of the same sort of functionality of what it was supposed to allow back in the day when it was added to WordPress. It too had its own share of security vulnerabilities. So I don't think we should be surprised, and maybe, I don't know, in some ways expect it, there will probably be one or if not more vulnerabilities discovered in the REST API as more developers start looking into the code, tinkering with it, and building things with it. So, you know, over time, this is just the way new code shakes out.
Yeah, and I think that the REST API is getting a lot more attention and security review and stuff from people. Yes, it's possible that we'll have some more vulnerabilities to fix in it, but I think that in the end it's going to be worth it, first of all, and I also think that we're not going to see this level of severity. The issue that we fixed was admittedly very severe, but I don't think that you're going to see that level of severity in issues. It's not sloppily written code. We didn't rush it in. You know, you guys have been talking about it for a couple years because it's been being worked on for a few years and by some extremely talented developers that are security conscious and, you know, some of them on our security team. So it's not completely full of holes. But yes, I think that there will be more issues in the future, just like WordPress has more issues that'll be coming in the future.
Wow. All right, man. I really appreciate you coming on here to give us some background information into how this process works. Who better than the team lead for WordPress security? I want to end this interview by first thanking you for what you do for the WordPress project, for making my WordPress site and millions of other sites more secure. I know that you are not the only one doing it. You have a great team of people who are also collaborating with you to make this happen. But I enjoy the work that you do, and it just kind of hopefully gives our listeners, you know, maybe it respects the team and the choices that are made in the post a lot more now that we know sort of the behind the scenes on the complex nature of what is security disclosure and how to handle these situations.
Yeah, it's a complex thing. And I think that as people start to realize that, hopefully they'll understand kind of the hoops that we jump through and the effort that we put in really to try to keep everybody's sites secure.
Excellent. I agree. Marcus, unless you have any further questions, we should probably wrap it up with Aaron here.
I think so. I just want to second what you said. I mean, I've even been educated just in this interview in terms of what goes into it, what the behind the scenes looks like. what the future entails. So, you know, thanks for everything you do. I really appreciate that. And I know the community does as well.
Absolutely. And with that said, Aaron, if we want to stalk you, so, you know, if we, you know, we want to be the first to know, you know, what's going on in the world of WordPress or security, or I don't know, maybe you post pictures of your cool hats. How can people follow you, get in touch with you?
Yeah, you'll find a little bit of all of that. I'm on Twitter at Aaron Campbell. My site is aarondcampbell.com. Those are probably the easiest places to find me. And at a lot of WordCamps. I'll be at WordCamp Atlanta this weekend. So if any of your listeners are there, they should come say hi.
Fantastic. Aaron, keep up the great work. And maybe sometime in a few months, we'll have you back on and you could tell us a little bit more about maybe the HackerOne program and some of the other stuff that the team is working on.
Sounds great.
Awesome. There you have it, folks. Aaron Campbell, the WordPress team lead for security there for the WordPress project. Very important position, as we found out.
Yeah.
So, Marcus, you know, this isn't well, you know what? All right. I did want to mention one news item before we get into the plugin picks of the week, and that is if you are a user of WooCommerce, the WooCommerce development team has announced that 3.0.0 will be released April 4th. And if you've been following development, you may be wondering, well, you know, what happened to 2.8, 2.9? Because they're working on WordPress 2.7. Well, there's been a lot of major changes that have gone on with WooCommerce, and one of them is the switch to what they call SEMVer, or semantic versioning. So instead of doing a two-number or two-digit release version, they're going to do three, which should allow developers, it should give them an easier time to discern major releases from minor releases. So that's why they did the semantic versioning in a nutshell. And they've also fixed a critical issue involving timestamps, which is pretty important. So they're working on that as well. But if everything goes right, after all the testing, you should see a update in your dashboard for WooCommerce somewhere around April 4th. Just wanted to pass that out to you.
Nice. And I would like to encourage all the artists out there, this would be a great time to do a 300 movie style poster for WooCommerce with Matt Mullenweg screaming to the troops. That would be fun.
I suppose so. I wonder what that would look like. With that said, hey, what do we have for plug and picks of the week?
Oh, we've got a plethora, or at least three. And it starts with Facebook Live Chat for WordPress. This makes it easier for customers to connect with your business via Facebook Messenger. And Facebook Messenger is becoming an increasing trend for businesses to get customers to contact them. And it's really handy considering that Facebook Messenger is just like getting a text on your phone if you have the app installed. So check that one out. It is called Facebook Live Chat for WordPress. The next one, you know, we all sometimes, you know, most of us that start in WordPress start with something like Contact Form 7 to use to create contact forms. And I've got something new called Contact Form 7 Database. And what this allows you to do is save all of the submitted contact forms to a database. And then it actually gives you a contact database menu in the WordPress admin dashboard that you can go back and reference all the people that have contacted you in the past. Really handy. Gravity Forms does something like this, but Contact Form 7, not so much. And now it does with this plugin. And another great plugin that I've come up with for the plugin picks of the week that's along the same vein is called Total Spent by Customer for WooCommerce. And this adds a sortable column in your users list and shows you exactly how much that user has spent in total in your WooCommerce store. It's very quickly to figure out who your top customers are. You can even sort by this column, and that's really handy. Also, to find out who's never spent or spent just a little bit. Maybe you want to do a remarketing campaign, something like that. Check that one out. It is called Total Spent by Customer for WooCommerce, and those are my plugin picks of the week.
Excellent. So next week's show, we're going to have David and Fred on, and I think Alex, some folks from WP Shout on the show to talk about a new course they have that they're working on, or the second version of the course called WordPress Up and Coming. And we'll talk to them about that and some of the other projects they've got in the works. So I'm looking forward to that show. And that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on WPTavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, J-E-F-F-R-0. And Marcus?
And I'm happy to present a robot-free WordPress Weekly this week.
Thank you. I think our listeners are overjoyed.
Yes. You can find me at my website, MarcusCouch.com, and on Twitter at MarcusCouch.
Awesome. So everybody enjoy the rest of your week. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. So long, everybody.